Welcome to another Climate Tech Podcast, interviews with the people trying to save us from ourselves. Victoria Oseko is CMO of Carbominer, a startup that uses direct air capture to pull CO2 out of the atmosphere and use it for productive purposes like growing our fruits and vegetables in greenhouses. We talked about how this technology works, how to attract public money, and what the future of Ukrainian climate tech looks like. I reached Victoria in Warsaw. I'm Ryan Grant Little. Thanks for being here. Victoria, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Ryan, thanks for having me.
You are the chief marketing officer of Carbominer, which has a direct air capture technology for CO2. And direct air capture, or DAC for short, if I remember correctly, is one of those technologies where I think a lot of people are kind of culturally aware that this is a thing, but that awareness outpaces kind of the understanding of how it works. I wonder if you could give us a primer, without getting too technical, on what direct air capture is.
Yeah, sure. So basically, direct air capture is a technology to capture carbon dioxide from the open air. So it belongs to the wider scope of CCUS, so carbon capture and utilization technologies. But it sort of is a new and like a novel field where scientists and engineers are trying to extract CO2 from the ambient air. The challenge here is that CO2 in the atmosphere is at very low concentration. So it's like less than 1%. So in order to actually capture it, you need to like put a lot of energy to it. You need to pump the air through the fans and like make a lot of efforts to make sure the technology is as efficient as possible to do it at a low cost, or at least at a medium cost, at an affordable cost. So direct air capture is about capturing carbon dioxide. And this is the technology from this, an environmental climate tech scope that we are the main goal, like the ultimate goal of the direct air capture is to make sure that we remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere in the long run and prolong our existence on this planet. Let's put it that way.
I'm thinking of this movie from the 1980s with John Candy called Spaceballs, where they're like holding up a giant vacuum in the atmosphere. And so, I mean, basically, if I think about this 1% saturation of CO2, that's not a lot. You need to then probably find a way to capture this in a way that's not using more kind of electricity or, you know, some form of energy than it's worth.
Yeah, and the challenge actually is that if you use, with many technologies, it is so that if you use non-renewable, but like fossil-based, like traditional electricity or like electricity mix, then your technology can actually emit more carbon than it captures. So it's sort of a huge challenge for the industry. And that is why we are sort of everyone are like under big pressure of making sure that technology will utilize mainly renewable sources. May, like, it's okay, sort of, for the, you know, for the pilots, for the proof of concept to utilize traditional energy. But for the long run, renewable is the only way to go.
And you talked about fans. And what does this thing look like? What is it, a containerized unit? Or can you just kind of walk through how what the physical footprint of this is?
Yeah, sure. So basically, you just said it. It's a container-sized unit. For many technologies, it is so. Of course, like different technologies, different startups approach it in a different way. But mainly, the idea is to make container-sized, like modular, this unit that has a fan and that has some magic inside going on, filtering the CO2 out from the air. And for you probably have heard of the biggest DAC players out there. They are building huge plants. So their plants are consisting of many such container-sized modules. So many containers put on top of each other, and that is their like plants. So that is the great way of how they can make it easy to scale, easy to transport, easy to unload and start the plant.
And who is it for? Who are you getting the most interest from? So is this something where I decide that I want my business to be carbon neutral, and so I buy a bunch of these and put them in my parking lot? Or who is it for?
Well, no, like it's not for like B2C, it's mainly for B2B. So we are selling, for instance, Carbon Miner, we sell CO2 to indoor farmers. They need carbon dioxide that we capture from the air to boost the plant growth of their farms. And this is an already viable product. So they already buy CO2 and inject it in their farms. So for us, it's like not... For them, it's not something new. The novelty comes only with the understanding that this is a sustainable CO2 instead of commodity gray one, right? But the application amount, the number of applications, potential applications of direct air capture is enormous. The whole carbon tech opportunity is just crazy. So it's valued of $1 billion just only in US, according to researchers, and it includes all of the applications that CO2 is potentially can be used for. For instance, fuels, sustainable synthetic fuels, for instance, some fertilizers. It also can be used in fire extinguishers. It can be used in medical applications. So anyone who needs carbon dioxide can come to a direct air capture company. The other very important market to like state and give you here as an information, piece of information, is the carbon removal market. And the clients there are the corporate buyers. So some big corporations that are looking to reduce their current footprint, or for instance, mainly it is, the thing is about their historical emissions. So for instance, Amazon, they have a lot of research done about what the historical carbon footprints they did over the course of their existence as a company. And they are taking responsibility over it. And in order to help them sort of deal with it, this is where decarbonization companies come into place, and CDR startups, and those can be many other technologies, but DEC plus storage comes also in this category.
Okay, interesting. So from a business model perspective, you're potentially making money on the capture itself from companies that have a footprint that they want to offset. And then you're also making money potentially with selling CO2 as a commodity to everything from, it sounds like, greenhouses through to fire extinguisher companies or whatever. You can store it and basically sell it as a commodity out there. Is that right? So you have these two revenue streams?
Yeah. So basically, you either sell CO2 as a product, or you sell the removal of CO2 as a, not a product, but already a service, you know, as a certificate that a company gains that verifies that it has paid for this CO2 removal.
And so if I think of like the indoor agriculture market, if I think of greenhouses, they're getting bigger and bigger over the past number of years. They must be then huge users of CO2. Is that kind of the market entry point for you?
Yeah, for us, definitely we have decided that at this point we see a lot of demand in the indoor agriculture market. We see that farmers are like, they need this CO2, and they will need it more and more increasingly in the coming years due to the carbon footprint regulations in European Union, for instance, on the combustion on site. So it's sort of, they will get a taxation if they like stay the way they are. So the best way for them is to switch to sustainable CO2, or at least search for ways of how they can switch in the future, due to the fact that it can become just basically unfeasible for them. It does not apply to each and every country. It applies, it's more of a like general trend, you know, but if we can bring the same product, so CO2 is just the same, it's 99.8% pure CO2. So if for them there is no difference, so why not switch, you know, to sustainable one? And this is like the huge work that we as a company and industry needs to do, because for clients to sometimes understand the need to go to sustainable, sometimes it's a quick way to go, but sometimes it's a long road to go.
It's so funny. I mean, it makes total sense that it's sustainable CO2. I've never heard this term before. And I'm just thinking in my mind, you know, putting my marketing hat on, like Carbon Miner, your source for sustainable CO2 since 2020 or something. Like, yeah. But yeah,
I mean, That's free.
The last question I have kind of about the technology itself. So you mentioned that, you know, there are some specific things about the technology that kind of differentiates you. And one of the terms I caught on your website is electrochemistry regeneration, which sounds to me like maybe the thing that Dr. Frankenstein pioneered. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit, you know, again, in very basic terms, what is electrochemistry regeneration?
Yeah, sure. So let me give you a quick overview of carbominer technology overall, because carbominer DC technology combines several engineering innovations, and including electrochemistry is one of them. For instance, on the capturing stage, we combine dry and wet capture methods, and this is how we enable better efficiency compared to most known DC technology on the capturing stage. But the issue with the direct air capture is that the biggest energy need is on the regeneration stage. So on the later stage, at first you capture CO2, and then you need to sort of regenerate it, and you need to make a pure output. So you capture it to some filter, and then you need to detach it from the filter, if we speak in easy terms. And on the regeneration stage, it is where we use indeed the electrochemistry regeneration. This is one of the most promising and cheapest ways in the industry to release CO2. And in our case, it also allows us to consume intermittent renewable energy in hours of overproduction when the prices are significantly low. So it sort of gives us the way, to make sure that we... So these engineering innovations, they are designed to make sure that we make the cheapest solution possible, make it the most affordable way to capture CO2. And important note, we are not the only one to use electrochemistry, but if you look at the competitors and take a sneak peek on what their promises on prices and do investors believe them, those that have electrochemistry have the, in my opinion, the biggest perspective.
Got it. You've been noticed by the EU, by a number of accelerators out there, and you most recently received a 1.5 million euro grant from the European Innovation Council. Congratulations. That's huge. I know it's a very competitive funding program. A lot of the listeners to this podcast are climate tech founders themselves, always in this continuous search for early non-dilutive funding like this. I wonder if you have some advice for them, since you've done this so well, about how to successfully look for and secure public funding. What improves the odds of success?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I wanted to, take a step back and to tell you about EC accelerator, traditional success rates. They are an average, from the short submission to the awarding stage is around 7%. So you cannot say it's this super competitive. It's indeed competitive, but the success rate is kind of okay. So there are good chances to get the funding. And among each year, I think around 3,000 startups and SMEs apply for funding from the EEC accelerator. So you sort of get the numbers, you see that there are some great chances. In our batch, we were one of the 47 companies that received this funding. So the whole process is divided. There are first short application stage where you need to just, quickly submit your pitch deck, some main data, your idea for the project, maybe run the numbers quickly, and then outline it as a whole story and submit. And then there is a long application. So the second stage, which comes if you are validated and your idea and your story adds up and experts think that it might work. And then you need to outline the business process, the business plan for the project, for the whole project for a couple of years. And you need to say, okay, we will use this funding for that. We will use this amount of resources for that. We will hire this and that profiles. So it's sort of like a real business plan, a project Gantt chart, so a lot of work and a lot of effort. And then the third stage is the interview, where you need to give all the information about this business plan this project that you are aiming to receive funding for. And then there is the award stage. So basically, from our perspective, it was super hard. It took, I think, up to 8 months for the whole process. We engaged with the consultancy company to help us to shape the narrative, to understand just, you know, only to understand the process, you need already someone to assist you because it's quite complex. But I guess 7% is a great success rate. In our case, it was 7.25. So even a bit more.
Okay. And would you recommend to founders to also use a consultant or someone to guide them through a process like that? Was that helpful?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. You can reach out to me. I can recommend already three great consultancy agencies. We worked only with one. So, okay, we worked with two, but I won't recommend the first one because we didn't win back then. But the three that I wanted to recommend, I recommended to every and each and every founder that comes to me. Those are the ones that have proven. So I know the companies that they have led to the final stage, to the upward stage. Yeah, I definitely recommend because it's a non-dilutive funding. It's a great way to go. It's helps you shape the narrative even for yourself and understand, like, it forces you to think of the next steps, to think of what's next and how you are going to achieve those next steps and those KPIs and goals and so on and so forth. And it also, this huge work, it proves to VCs, to investors, that actually you are capable of that mind work. You are capable to think for 1, 2, 3 years in the future. And you already trusted. So someone trusted you. This big entity as EAC Fund, as EAC Accelerator, has trusted you. They have validated you. They have like made a due diligence of you. So maybe you are not that bad after all, you know? We should take a look at you.
Yeah, as an angel investor, I love when a startup has non-dilutive funding early on as well. You're from Kyiv. You moved the company to Poland after the full-scale invasion. I was in Kyiv last week, which was the second time I've been there in the past few months. And I'm always very impressed with the quality of the startups there and also in the diaspora, which is growing, of course, and especially given the circumstances. I'm curious to hear from you. What do you think, you know, what is your vision for the climate tech and maybe food tech ecosystem in Ukraine after the victory?
So first of all, thank you very much for pointing that out. We are a Ukrainian company. We love being a Ukrainian company. We will forever be a Ukrainian company. And also thank you for coming to Kyiv. You know, you're not afraid and you are like proving to the world that it's bad that what's going on. It's awful, but businesses still work there. Like people still live there. People go for their morning coffee. Life goes on, at least in Kyiv and western parts of the Ukraine.
The hard part for me is leaving. Like, you know, I could stay there forever. It's a fantastic city. And of course, there are some, yeah. It's different now than it was a couple of years ago. And there are some things to get used to while you're there, but it's a fantastic city. And I mean, it's basically where I'm going on vacation at the moment as well. So yeah, wow. I think maybe not a lot of people are doing that, but I can still highly recommend it. And great. I like, you know, vegan food and restaurants and hipster cafes, and it's a world capital for those two things.
Yeah, totally, totally. You know, even though I moved already 2 years ago, like soon it will be the anniversary, like exactly 2 years, but it is, I'm still like very heartbroken because Kyiv is my favorite city and I never ever wanted to live somewhere else, even though I was in a lot of places all around Europe, USA and so on. So back to your question, climate tech in Ukraine, I think it's still like in very early stages, you know, it's like a sort of, you can make analogy, it's like a child that's just, you know, starting out, making its first steps, like a toddler, a three-year-old, and you are sort of, well, three-year-old, it's too late. Like, I see it as a three-year-old, but it's still learning, you know, what is what and how the business works. I see a huge problem, and it's not only for climate tech, but for generally for startup world in Ukraine. I believe that founders very often come from business background and from scientific background, but they lack a startup background. So as the industry is only starting out, like I think we are 10 years, maybe 15, but we are just only learning to how does it work. And VCs are learning and startups are learning. And I think it slows things down sort of in a way. But for the climate tech, I see great perspectives. I know many climate tech startups. I'm super connected in this sphere. I enjoy speaking to NGOs in Ukraine, for instance, Green Kubater. They have done immense work to make sure that just ideas, you know, just even not startups yet, but just ideas are grown into some sort of businesses that they are heard, you know, that they have received some needed boost and validation to make sure that they outgrow to become something more. So, yeah.
Well, please consider sending those startups my way as both an angel and as a podcast host. I'd be very happy to talk to them. What's the best place for people to find you online if they want to get in touch, especially if they want to hear about those two or three consultants that you recommend for finding the non-dilutive funding?
Totally LinkedIn. I'm also on Facebook, but I know that European audience is not doing business on Facebook. But in Ukraine, it's a typical situation that a founder can have a Facebook page and Facebook company page, but not have LinkedIn company page. So yeah, I am on Facebook, on LinkedIn. My Insta is just for friends and family. So like the best way is on LinkedIn, but you can also reach out to company email, to our website, because I'm also on that side of all those incoming, and I can take the question there as well.
I'll put all of those links in the show notes then. Victoria, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Thank you, Ryan. Likewise.
Thanks for listening to another Climate Tech podcast. It would mean a lot if you would subscribe, rate, and share this podcast. Get in touch anytime with tips and guest recommendations at hello@climatetechpod.com. Find me, Ryan Grant Little, on LinkedIn. I'll be back with another episode next week. Bye for now. This episode is supported by Grizzle, B2B content to create and capture demand. I first met Grizzle's founder, Tom Whatley, 5 years ago at a conference in Dublin. I was so impressed that I signed a deal with him to do all my software company's content that same evening at the pub. Remember that, Tom?
Kinda.
And they're still doing it 2 years after we sold the company because the new owners love Grizzle as much as I do. If you sell B2B, book 30 minutes in Tom's calendar at grizzle.io/climate. That's GRIZZLE.io/climate.